people signed up, and let's see, I first have Sherry, is it Springer? Did I pronounce that correctly? And then following that, Rob Wagner from AFT Oregon.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Galizio and members of the committee, for this opportunity to come and address you today. My name is Sherry Springer. I'm board chair for the Lebanon Community School District. I'm a member of the OSBA Legislative Policy Committee, and probably, definitely to me, more important than either of those roles, I'm a mom of a student in the district I serve. I appreciate the work that's been done thus far to move us towards the goal of $6.3 billion for education funding. And I'm excited about that. I'm very excited about that. In the last 4 years that I've served on my school board, I came in at a time, obviously 4 years ago, where drastic cuts had been made, and we were reaping the consequences of those. And we have been able to add a little bit back. We spent a couple years continuing those cuts. This year, we worked a little bit towards improving some of our programs, and it is with, I don't know, I can't express the anticipation I have of the programs that we can potentially restore as we get to that goal of $6.3 billion. In my son's school alone, which is probably where I have the best firsthand knowledge and have volunteered in his class every week for the last 5 years, I'm in there, and the 5 years we've been there, we've never had an art program. The first year, we had some music, and that was it. And there's been no more music in our music room sets with dormant instruments and books and dust. And so this year, where we have about a half-time music teacher. And you know what? Half of music is better than no music. But a whole program is better than a half a program. He lost PE for a while. We have PE half-time. So what does that tell us? We've trimmed to the bare bones. And it's about teachers and textbooks. And that's what we talk about, is teachers and textbooks, because that's what we can afford. And when I think about restoring art, when I think about more music, when I think of the option of band, and I'm talking one school of our 8 schools, I'm incredibly excited about that. And I spend a fair amount of my time identifying these needs and attempting to address them. And I'm so happy for your support and your continued support in this endeavor. So, if I could be a vain mom for a moment, and if we've got kids, we can understand this position. Last year, I went out to our land lab, and it's a really cool facility that was given to us years ago, and there's all sorts of animals out there, and a greenhouse, and it is a great hands-on living laboratory for our kids, for our high schoolers. It's towards the end of the year, so I was able to take my son. He hadn't been out there, and it's a very valued thing in our family to invest in education and be excited about education, because it's the most important thing we do as a state. And so I took him out there with me, and we're walking around, and there was this old, dilapidated, terrible-looking truck. And I really put my foot in my mouth. And I looked at the instructor out there, and I said, "Why do you have that thing out here?" And he says, "That's our truck, and that's what we've got." Well, I felt like a heel and tried to crawl under something. So we went home, and just as an adult, I beat myself up saying, "Gosh, I really put my foot in my mouth." But my son was a little brighter than his mother and went home and dumped his piggy bank, took him into the district office the next day, and he dumped his Ziploc bag of pennies out and said, "Those kids need a truck." And that's what I ask you for today. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Springer. Before you go, maybe, okay. I don't know if there are any questions or comments. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your testimony, for taking the time to come out.
Thank you.
Greatly appreciate it. Rob Wagner, AFT Oregon.
Oh, he already did. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Wagner. I'm the Director of Political and Legislative Affairs for the American Federation of Teachers here in Oregon. And of our 12,000 members, over 2,500 are K-12 classified school employees in four districts around the state, in Hillsborough, and Scappoose, and John Day, and also Portland. We just wanted to get our voice on the record supporting the unprecedented coalition work, supporting the $6.3 billion budget for K-12. And I will say that it was a pretty unprecedented coalition that came together to work. And there's a lot of bills that come through this building where people have differences of opinion. But to come together and realize that for the benefit of where we need to be as a state and a true investment in our K-12 system, in order to restore some of what we've lost for the last 15-plus years, we needed to put mount a real charge. I will just remind folks that it was not that long ago that out in Hillsborough we were looking at 17 days lost off the school year. This led to program cuts and increased class sizes and staff layoffs. We lost members, good quality jobs in that community. The $6.3 billion request is a step toward restoration of a program area. I also just want to get on a record that AFT supports the education enterprise outlined by the governor. And as the Ways and Means Committee heads on the road in the weeks to come, we hope that we will consider similar requests to rebuild the budgets in community colleges and the university system, looking at education as the continuum that deserves to be treated as. I know it's not in this committee, but whether it's bridge financing, we urge folks to consider additional revenue, closing tax loopholes, raising corporate minimum in order to fund the continuum of programs this session. Like I said, either if it's bridge financing or if it's the four tenors proposal of looking at a broader tax reform, broader tax reform maybe during the interim, and we definitely are interested in engaging in that discussion. As a part of the K-12 coalition, I will say that we're not immune to the criticism of the co-chair's budget number that we've been hearing about. And I think it's important to look at something in terms of the correct perspective of what the $6.3 billion request is. And in trying to find some allegory to relate this to, I think of the frog in the pot. And what we're doing with a $6.3 billion request is we're turning the heat down from a raving boil down to an intense simmer, but it doesn't mean that we haven't cooked education. What we'd like to see is across the board, and I know in discussions with Senator Morris and others, that we know that there is need out there, that we have a systemic shortfall, and that probably will not be addressed, but that we need to start talking about as a state. We would just ask folks to consider turning the heat down on the other programs as well, but not at the expense of what we need to do to invest in a quality K-12 system. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
May I make a comment?
Please.
Please correct me if I didn't recall this correctly, but you said that there was a point at which the school system had to cut 17 days from the curriculum. Do you recall when that was?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I believe it was in 2002 of the 2002-2003 school
yes.
year.
And do you recall what the circumstances were that led to that?
Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, I'm assuming you're talking about a recession and some other economic factors and the failure of what was the referral of House Bill 2158, which became Measure 30, which was going to keep our schools open that year.
The Measure 30 was based on I recall it being somewhat different than that. I recall, and please correct me if I'm not remembering, but I recall that the school year had to be cut short in the biennium previous to that, because by the time there was an acknowledgement that there was not going to be able to be enough revenue to finish out the school year, we were so late in the school year that there really was no other options for making economies, and it was a very stressful time. I'm not sure if I'm remembering this correctly, but I think the point that I want to make is that in order to close out the 03 session, there was a significant tax increase that was put in place to fund the budgets that had been passed by the Assembly. And then, as you stated, there was an initiative, and that was placed on the ballot by the people of the state of Oregon, and it was overwhelmingly rejected, and the budgets were cut back in a number of areas to compensate for the loss of the revenue. And I think that we should all bear that scenario in mind as we begin deliberations on how to fund the level of services that are in the governor's budget and in the co-chair's budget, because I think that there's going to be an aspect to this that's going to be very hard to sell to the citizens of Oregon, and that is that this is very different than the situation in the 03 session. What we're looking at now is, in fact, a 20% increase in the revenue that the state has to spend on programs, and I'm not sure what is going to happen in the discussion out there amongst the citizens of the state of Oregon if we go out there with a wide variety of tax increases and tell them that 20% is not enough and that indeed we think that they should give the state more money to spend. So we just ask that as we proceed through this, that we not lose the lesson that we were taught by the citizens in at the end of the 03 session, and that the ability of the citizens of the state of Oregon and the willingness of the citizens to add more revenue to our already 20% gain needs to be a big part of the discussion.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I think that's very important, and we know that elected representatives are representing the will of their constituents and the citizens of the state. I will just note that this last election cycle, we had two ballot measures, which the folks all across the board were questioning whether or not there was the will for Oregonians to say no to cheap sloganeering and at the expense of vital public services. There was the taxpayer bill of rights, if folks remember, and then there was another Bill Sizemore drafted initiative that was sent out to the voters. And I think the high watermark on both of them was less than 40%. And if I'm not incorrect on the taxpayer bill of rights initiative, I don't believe it achieved better than 29 or 30% in any county in the state. So I guess I'm optimistic that we can have a quality discussion with voters, and that issues around revenue, which I know it is not the purview of this committee, but issues around revenue, around raising the $10 corporate minimum, which hasn't been raised since 1939, when a loaf of bread and a pound of hamburger cost 18 cents, that you know, we can have a quality discussion with Oregonians about the connection between those sorts of targeted tax increases and funding vital public services like education.
Representative Jensen.
That gallon of gas was 17.
I can't tell. Senator Devlin, are you just thinking about whether or not you want to even...
Well, I want to end with this phrase. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, I just couldn't tell if you had a question.
I will
let you know. Okay, you had it first. Is that a good one?
Well, I think it's a function of the review first. So I'm
this is, this, the, Mr. Wagner is the last person who signed up to testify.
Oh, good.
Unless there's...
There's another sheet over there.
There's another sheet over there, though. So, in the meantime, Senator Morse.
Well, thank you. It looks like we do have a few minutes to talk about the broader issue.
May I be excused, Mr. Chair?
No, I can't. So you have to stay there.
Well, and my comment would be, I think in this assembly we would not serve the public well if we don't at least have the discussion to tackle the systemic problems that we have in the state with respect to how we collect revenue, the adequacy in the stability issue, and instead choose to go the path of least resistance, which is the opportunistic seizure of the small incremental fixes that really don't address the systemic problems. And unfortunate if we hold this bill in June without having had that discussion. Because in response to the Measure 30 problem, if I might, Mr. Chair, where the public clearly said they did not want a tax increase, would they be willing to support a tax reduction that would put another $900 million on providing in play? And every tax bracket would have a tax reduction. Mm-hmm. Would they, you know, can we have that discussion?
Mm-hmm.
From a business perspective, that's an easy answer. Yes, we should have that discussion.
Senator Devlin, you have something on the state school fund and the improvement fund?
Yes, and in terms of some of the direct funding related issues, and the issue that I think is a real issue, and the fact that we've had almost a 20% increase in general fund lottery fund revenue. I think part of our challenge actually is to explain to the public why. On the human services side, I believe the general fund increase in the governor's budget was about 27%. And the co-chairs, I believe it's probably a little bit around 26, of why it takes that to be adequate in that budget. I quite honestly know that if you tried to cut that to 20, I doubt if you'd have any votes, or very many votes in the House or Senate, Democratic or Republican, that would be willing to make those cuts. The increase, although large in the K through 12, is about 18%. And part of the reason it's 18% is you're trying to make up for maybe about a quarter of what you've lost over the last 4 years in that budget also. But here's so that you can take this back to your boss. So you know it was least mentioned. The increase in the community college budget, I think, is about 6%. So you might have to explain with the 20% increase in revenue why community colleges are only receiving a 6% increase.
Mr. Chair, we definitely look forward to having that discussion on April 16th.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Wagner.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Now I call up Tricia Smith from Oregon School Employees Association. Looks like the final person testifying today at this point.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent proudly the 20,000 members of the Oregon School Employees Association. OSEA members are working hard every day helping to provide the highest quality education possible to our children and adults of Oregon in our Head Start agencies, K-12, districts, ESDs, community colleges, park and recreation districts, and libraries. I'm here today to praise the efforts of the governor and the co-chairs in producing budget proposals that recognize and begin to reverse the devastating cuts in funding and, by extension, in services that K-12 districts have struggled under for the last few years. As I'm sure you're aware, districts since in the last 5 years have lost about $1.2 billion with a B dollars in funding. That translates to almost $800 per student in the K-12 system. It's been impossible to absorb these cuts without diminishment of the services and the quality of education that children receive in our schools and desperately need if we are to give them the successful future that we want for them and that we know you want for them. Both budget proposals recognize that those cuts must be restored and we must begin again our effort to find ourselves at the funding level recommended by the quality education model, which is the level that we need in order to comply with the state and federal mandates to provide successful education opportunities for our children. However, we need not only to restore what we've lost, as I said, but to build toward that quality education funding model if schools are to do what the law requires of them. And that's why, in spite of the fact that we praise the governor and the co-chairs for their budgets which put us on that road, that is why we have joined the effort and remain in the collection of school advocates that are appealing to you to set the appropriation level in House Bill 5020 at $6 billion and 5021 at $300 million. You've heard compelling testimony about some of the impacts inadequate funding of our schools have caused from the perspectives of administrators and of teachers and what it might mean with an appropriation at the level that we request. Let me offer an additional perspective to you today, and that is the perspective of those professionals who have often the most direct interaction with students, and those are the unlicensed staff in our schools. They'd be here today with me to talk to you in person about their perspective, but they'd have to take the day off of work, which would cause them to lose a day's pay and that day with their students. So I'm hoping that I can provide you their information and do it with some justice to them in my remarks. The largest percentage of our membership is made up of professionals who work as educational assistants. That's about 40% of the 20,000 folks that we represent. These are the staff members who provide the one-on-one instruction of the children existing in what's known around here as the achievement gap. Educational assistants provide direct instruction to special education students, English language learners, Title I low-income students, and children with behavioral issues. When the kid can't make it in the classroom, he's taught by the educational assistant. There are also classroom assistants that allow a teacher's time and attention to stretch further in overcrowded classrooms today. Library assistants who used to assist the library but now handle the whole library since the librarian position has been eliminated as a result of cuts. And there are specialists who assist in providing additional services required by some of our special needs students, such as speech-language pathology assistants. These professionals have been asked to shoulder more and more of the responsibility of educating our children and more of the responsibility for student achievement success, and often without adequate professional development or support. Many of our educational assistants used to have full-time positions. Today, most work part-time and many without access to health insurance or other benefits. But when I asked them what the greatest problem has been in coping with the budget cuts, they talk about the loss to students of adequate teaching and support staff, the lack of programs and equipment students need to succeed, and the difficulty in remaining positive about the future of children and the education we're providing when each year is worse than the last. School bus drivers are an interesting group, I think, of dedicated professionals. They're interesting to me, at least, because I simply can't imagine spending a 30-year career in a big metal box that I have to maneuver in rush hour traffic with 70 kids behind me that I also have to control. That's interesting. And their focus is on professionalism and a very high-quality performance. They, too, have had their hours cut, their routes lengthened, and their wages and benefits threatened or reduced. When asked what they see as the greatest problem of inadequate budgets, they tell me it's the struggle to keep aging equipment safe and operational, and the difficulty their districts are having in hiring enough school bus drivers to meet the need. School secretaries are now asked to shoulder many duties once provided by school administrators and other licensed professionals such as school nurses, who are no longer there. And they tell about their concern with being asked to perform functions for which they have not been trained or have had little training, but they know that they're the only one left in line to do the job. Our school nutrition workers are losing their jobs to vending machines, and our kids are losing the benefit of nutritious food offerings at school. Our custodians and maintenance staff are learning to be masters at fixing old, broken-down equipment and buildings because there's no money to repair or replace them. Make no mistake, OSEA members are not complete philanthropists. They work to support their families, and continuing in their chosen professions has become harder with each cut and each sacrifice. All of these impacts translate to fewer and lower quality services provided to school children. And all of these impacts can be lessened. Schools set firmly on the road to providing the highest quality education possible to our children, and the economic vitality of our communities and our state made more secure with a $6 billion appropriation to the state school fund and a $300 million appropriation to the school improvement fund. We hope you'll take a step toward restoration of our public school system to one of the best in the country this session. And I'd like to conclude my remarks by echoing something that Mr. Wagner said to you earlier. As I mentioned at the beginning of my remarks, we represent professionals working in the education continuum from Head Start through community colleges. You cannot fund one part of that continuum at the expense of the others. You cannot fund one part and ignore the others. They must all be sufficiently funded. They must all be adequately funded. And we hope that you will work with us as we will work with you to provide the adequate revenue that you need to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Smith. Any questions or comments? Senator Devlin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Smith was testifying here as Representative Morgan, who's now left, actually was recalling memory. I thought there was a memory I should recall here, too, and that is that this reminds me actually a lot of 2001. Not that the same thing's going to happen after this session, but at the beginning of the 2001 session, basically the body was in general agreement that the funding for K-12 would be $5.2 billion. Because of that, we had actually only a modest number of people that came in to testify. Now the body, being the public out there, sees the co-chair's number and believes that that's going to be the co-chair's number, and we only have a small, very good people, but small number of people to testify, unlike what we had in 2003 or 2005. I wouldn't interpret the small number of people to be that the people are not looking, because I actually do believe that when we get to some of the other education budgets, like community college and OUS, where the people are not as happy with some of our recommendations, we will probably be full. And actually, if the co-chairs had come in at 6.0, I'm pretty sure this room would have been full both days of testimony. So I don't think we should interpret actually the fact that there have only been a few people here to testify today, that there isn't an interest in the public in what the level of this budget is.
Thank you, Senator. Any other comments or questions? Ms. Smith, thank you very much. And we have one more. Yes, I was incorrect.
I hope it's the young man.
It's not. It's I'm going to call Dana Hepper from Stanford Children. Poor kid's trying to get some work done.
Chair Glizio, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify. Our members are not here because they are at home on the phone getting people to come to the field hearings. So we'll see them. They're coming.
What field hearings would that be?
I'm sorry. I want to see everyone's awake. All right. Go ahead.
Did I say Dana Hepper, Stanford Children? Just wanted to quickly share with you my take on the problem, as you've been hearing a variety of takes on the problem. My take on the problem is as a former third grade teacher, and I think teachers across the state in Oregon for the past 15 years can all tell you the same story about the end of the year staff meeting. So this is my version of the story. In May 2004, I was teaching in the North Clackamas School District. Our district had already cut, in previous years, half of our janitorial staff. We'd cut PE back, so kids had PE one day a week. Computer teacher had been cut. Our fourth, fifth, and sixth grades had 34 to 36 kids per class. And, of course, we were learning in portable buildings. So this is the situation before the budget cuts were announced for the following year at the end of the year staff meeting. So for our 2005-2006 school year, my school would lose all of our librarians in the entire district. Our lower elementary school grades would grow to 28 students per class. We would buy no new books. Our classroom supply budgets were cut from $150 a year to $100 a year. And you all know the North Clackamas School District is not alone in the state in having similar experience. So just quickly on the 520, which are considering the state school fund. Stanford Children members are organizing to attend hearings around the state to tell you that they're thrilled that for the first time in a long time we're talking about a state school fund that may, for some districts, start to bring some of the essential programs that have been cut back. As you know, also very well, we've been a strong advocate for a solid state school fund. We were dedicated hours and hours of staff and volunteer time to organize, to coordinate with our partners the rally on the Capitol steps on President's Day, which saw over 3,000 people who were here and really care about what happens with the state school fund and the school improvement fund, and will continue to pay attention. We've met with over 60 legislators on that day and others, made phone calls, written letters. I'm sure many of you have received them, and are really excited to be at the field hearings over the next couple of weeks to share the stories of what's happening in local districts all across the state. We also want to be really clear that we are completely committed to supporting additional revenue sources so this state can invest in all of the things that make our community strong. They've made public school funding and improvement their top priority, but we're absolutely committed to revenue for all kinds of programs that we know strengthen the state, strengthen the lives that our kids lead, and grant them greater opportunities to be successful in life. I want to focus for just a minute on one specific program that Stanford Children members have been working on, and that is quality mentors for new educators. The governor, the co-chair, Stanford Children, Chalkboard Project, and others have made quality mentoring of new educators a top priority because it's one of the most high leverage investments we can make when it comes to improving public schools. It's one of the few opportunities we have to invest in something different in education and really make a statewide commitment to doing this thing really well. And it's one of the things that as we researched, as Chalkboard Project researched what was going on across the country when it came to quality educational practices, something that's proven to increase student achievement, increase teacher retention, which is incredibly costly when we have a number of teachers leaving the profession, and increase principal effectiveness throughout the course of their careers. You may remember, although this seems like a long time ago now, the governor recommended $5 million for quality mentoring through the Department of Education, and the co-chairs also recommend investing in mentoring, but due to a minor oversight, they put mentoring in the state school fund, and we think it's better operated through the Department of Education for a couple reasons. One is that our allocation to districts for mentoring of new educators needs to be based on the number of new educators, not on the number of students. So it shouldn't be a per student allocation, but a per new teacher allocation, and it can't be that way through the state school fund. And then we also think we benefit with the mentoring program. If we're committing to doing something statewide and doing it well, we want to make sure we have the review and oversight in place to check to see that we did it well. And so we think the Department of Education is the appropriate place to do that. Then it's much harder if it's not under the auspices of that body. I feel really passionately about this. As a former first-year teacher who didn't receive significant mentoring and really struggled to be successful and ended up leaving the profession after feeling like I wasn't being successful at meeting the needs of a diverse student population. So I'm really excited to see other teachers have this opportunity and want to work with you to make sure that the money is in the right spot so that we can do this program effectively and make a commitment to it. In closing, also, we're obviously very excited about the school improvement fund. The co-chairs have recommended a $260 million improvement fund, and we really understand and support the accountability that's tied in with the school improvement fund as a way to give this body and the voters increased public confidence in our schools that we're doing things well and we're investing money in the right places. We haven't been able to reinvest in programs in a long time, and we want to make sure that every dollar that we get to reinvest goes to something that is really makes a difference for kids and student achievement. So incredibly excited to see that done. Stanford Children's set a goal of being a part of bringing Oregon's schools to the top 10 in the nation within 10 years, and we think this is a really critical first step to getting there. So we're really excited to be working with you toward that goal.
Thank you, Ms. Hepper. I think you made one of the strongest arguments I've heard yet Sure. You were a teacher. Now you're lobbying. So if we fund schools better, we'll have more teachers and fewer lobbyists? Which is, I think, a powerful argument. Senator Devlin.
One of your, I hate to interject ways and means language here,
yes.
But one of the realities of this is that the co-chairs have put the mentoring program in the state school fund. But just because something is in the state school fund does not mean that it's distributed on a per ADMW basis.
Okay.
We have always had at least some items that were like deductions from the state school fund before the rest of it went through the formula, and I believe that's the co-chair's intention, not to distribute it per ADMW, but it just is part of the whole, but it's one of the deductions from it. And there have always been those deductions.
Right, Chair DeLizio, Senator Devlin, that's a great distinction, and I am excited to learn more about how to make this happen well. So,
thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Separate, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. So just one, I just wanted to make one closing comment. You don't have to stay. So today we heard, I think, from everybody that there's a belief that we need to fund K through 12 adequately, and that we also shouldn't do it at the same time we're sort of disinvesting at the OUS and community college level. And I think it'll be really telling to see what happens in the next couple months in terms of how much pressure is put on this committee about the timing of the budget. And if the true belief is that we have to look at all sectors of the education continuum, then for us to do our job in a responsible way, we need to be able to take the long view, and we should not have a lot of pressure to get one of the budgets out while then struggling later with the post-secondary budget. So I'm looking to the advocates who spoke today and everyone else who might be paying attention to keep that in mind when they're talking to the people in this building. So any other comments or with that, I'm going to close the public hearing and we are adjourned.